welcome to the Ted and Austin Brower Show with your host, Ted and Austin Brower. Thanks for having us with you guys today. How are you doing today, Dan?
I'm doing great today, Austin. In fact, we want to give the listeners an update. We actually went to the Pulse nightclub to see what was going on up there today. And we actually did a complete perimeter walk around it. We'll tell you the story here in just a minute as we proceed through this. And the place is in a very seedy area of Orlando known as Heroin Highway. Very, very run-down part of the city. A lot of heroin deaths occur there. And it has had a black PVC privacy fence board on board. Might have been wood, painted black around the front of the building and all the way around the sides of the building to prevent people from seeing, I guess, who was in there. I've never seen that before in a club. When you see through the front entrance area, there's like a porch area with an outside bar where people could stand around outside. And, of course, you could see the other door going in. The entire building is painted black. It's out of concrete block, which would be good for stopping 2-3 rounds. It was an old building. It only had one entrance and one exit in it. The police were still there in force. They were still directing traffic around it, but they weren't blocking the road anymore. Our navigation showed the road was still blocked up and just completely shut down, but it was not. And we ended up asking the police officer if we could park where we did, which was not an illegal spot. But he said because of the heavy traffic around the building, it was a bad place to leave the car. But we left the car there anyhow, instead of walking a quarter of a mile. There were only about 6 or 8 parking spots at the building. I don't know how they're putting 700-800 people in there at night with this amount of spots, because there was no parking except for other businesses around there who may lease out the spots at night to this club, or they could park it on the street, I guess. But there was an empty field about a quarter of a mile away. The interesting thing about this is they'd erected an 8-foot chain link fence around the entire outside front of the perimeter of the building that had spots that people had torn the paper off of it where you could see into the building. That's why I have all this information. So it was interesting. There was 2 police officers sitting with a cooler full of drinks in their chairs on the one side of the building where the hazmat crews were still working. And then there was 1 police officer on the other side of the building sitting in a car by himself, making sure people stayed off the other guy's property, apparently. So it was very, very interesting. So we'll walk through this thing together, Austin. Go ahead and tell them what you saw, and then I'll kind of fill in the pieces when you get done. You can do the same for me.
Okay, yeah. It was definitely a very, very interesting area. Like Dad said, it's very, you can tell it's very run down. The parking spots that I saw, same thing he said. You could see through a lot of the tarps, so we were kind of peering and running, just poking through the tarp, trying to see everything we could. There was a lot of flowers, pictures, stuff they had put on the front area of the tarp right by the road. There were about 4 or 5 individuals standing out there still taking photos, putting flowers down. And, there was really, from what I saw, maybe 8 to 10 parking spots that would be available. The building took up almost the entire lot. And one thing that was interesting was that they had a big, almost a box truck there. I forgot the name on it. I was trying to see it as far as the name, but I forgot what it was. I didn't have my phone with me. And there was a hazmat. I actually watched him. He walked out of the main entrance, full hazmat suit. I mean, head to toe, full hazmat gear, taped up, full respirator, and went into the truck and got a big box. It had a bunch of almost hazmat placards on it, and carried it out of the truck and went back in. So they're still doing hazmat work inside the building, apparently, which is strange to me, because if this was a true, like, hoax false flag where nothing happened at all, this is just a total hoax, I don't really understand why over 2 weeks later you would still have legitimate hazmat teams working in there. This begs me to bring the question up, is that there's more than likely a real situation that happened here. I don't know the whole thing yet. Like I said, there's such conflicting ideas. The one officer that was in the truck, we were able to speak to him for a few minutes. You could tell he really, really wanted to talk to us. He told us, basically, he couldn't really say anything under a gag order. He did say, though, that one of his good friends works in hazmat, and they did pull 44 bodies out of the building. And he was very specific about that number. He did not deviate at all on it. So I thought that was interesting. He also said the media has completely sensationalized this entire event, and implied, as I said before, he even admitted he was under a gag order. He implied that the whole situation is not what everybody thinks it is, and it did not go down the way that everybody thinks it is, and that the media portrayed it. So that's pretty much my perception of what I saw with it. Dad also got to speak to him a little bit more. Traffic was pretty loud out there, so I was trying to listen to him as well while he was in the vehicle. What else did you pick up on, Dad, while we were over there?
Well, the first thing I noticed is when we walked up to his truck, you could tell he wasn't used to being talked to. He was sitting by himself, and there were kind of a lonely police officer sitting in a pickup truck with the motor running. And, you know, I said, can we ask you a few questions? We're really confused about the events that occurred here a few weeks ago. I said, we've gotten so much conflicting information from the police and from the media and from the FBI. I said, is it true that you guys are under an FBI gag order and you guys can't speak about what happened here? He goes, yes, it's true. I can't talk to you about any of this stuff. I said, oh. And he goes, but there are a few things I can't tell you. You gotta love this guy. Now if I had shoved my iPhone in his face with a camera going, he would have said anything. I guarantee you, he'd have said absolutely nothing. But he was really cool. And he basically told us that, you know, that the media had completely lied about what was going on, that they had sensationalized it, and what you had heard in the media was not what had happened. I mean, this is some crazy stuff he was saying, guys. And that basically that you have to wait for the full investigation to come out, and hopefully that we'll be able to learn what the truth is when that whole investigation comes out, that his friend who was part of the hazmat team did personally pull 44 bodies out of the building. When I asked him how long were the bodies left in the building before they were removed, he said, I can't discuss that. And I said, so he couldn't kind of tell you how long they've been in there. But think about this. There's a lot of blood, apparently, with 44 bodies, and he was talking about some of the stuff that he had seen on TV, and he told me he had not worked that night at all, and he was not involved at all with going into the building, so he has no personal knowledge of anything that happened. And he said that it was just a real mess on the inside, and we didn't ask him if he had gone inside, but I didn't think to do that. So then we walked around the other side of the building where we were parked, and the other two police officers sitting there chilling out with water and some chairs, sitting on the sidewalk with two ice chests around them. That's where the hazmat crew was parked, going in and out of the building. Now, remember, guys, these guys are wearing a double can of respirator mask. I mean, the odor in there must be unbelievable. I mean, you think about, you know, when an animal dies in the attic or whatever, how bad it smells. I remember years ago, I had a RV, and it had a freezer underneath it, and we took it in for service, and I had an old round-cut steak laying in the bottom of the thing, and the batteries went dead. They didn't plug it in, and the steak thing rotted in the bottom of this motorhome. And I mean, oh, my gosh, did it smell bad when you opened that thing up. It would gag you. It was so bad. So if we've got a bunch of blood in there that hasn't been cleaned up for 2 weeks, I can see why they were wearing respirators, just to be able to stand the smell. Now, you couldn't see into the building at all because it's pitch black. The whole building's black, like I mentioned earlier. So then I started talking to those police officers, and I asked them also, is it true that you guys are under a gag order? They said, yes, it is true. And I said, okay. I said, that's interesting. And I said, did either of you two work the case that night? Were you on call that night? And they said, no, we had nothing to do with any of this that happened here tonight, that night. I said, okay. And I said, we're very confused, and, you know, we feel sorry for these victims. And I said, we don't know what to believe because we've heard so much contrary information. And they too assured us that we needed to wait for the official report to come out. And then I almost said to them, I caught myself. I thought, oh, you'd be kind of like the 9/11 commission report with the 28 redacted pages. But I didn't say it because these guys were being really nice, and I didn't want to just, you know, stick my finger in their eye like that and make them, you know, think about what they were saying. But these guys, these two, because they were together, they were being very, very sheepish with what they said and very, very cautious with every word that came out of their mouth. But they did tell us they were under a court gag order from the FBI, and they were not allowed to speak about anything that happened or transpired that night. And then they said that they basically did not really know anybody who had been on call that night, which I thought was extremely odd that they did not know. So here we are again. Now it seems more likely that something did happen there, not what we think. I personally believe, after I heard Judge Napoliano, when everybody supposedly started getting shot, you know, after 5 o'clock when they breached the building, I think that these over-testosterone, geeked-up-on-steroids cops charged that building and just open fire. And the problem is, when you open fire in a building like that, especially with poor lighting to start with, what's going to happen is the entire building is going to fill with smoke almost instantaneously. And if you've ever been in a shooting area, you understand what I mean by that. In fact, if you watch the old movie Last of the Mohicans, which is our theme song for our show, I watched it the other night, and when they were ambushed, you know, they're using the old black powder, and that stuff puts out a tremendous amount of smoke. Now, new gunpowder doesn't do that, but it still puts out smoke. That's why if you go to shoot at places like Shoot Straight, they've got giant ventilator fans to keep the lead out of the air so you don't breathe the lead from the shot. So that's what's interesting about all of this is that, you know, it had to fill with smoke almost immediately if a 15 or 20 man assault team went in there, Austin, and opened fire, and then they wouldn't know what they were shooting at. So this is a major problem, but if the forensics is done correctly, they can take the gun from the shooter and they can analyze every single bullet that they found in the victims, and they can determine from which gun it came from if they'll tell us the truth. So I don't know. Again, we have a lot more understanding of what happened as far as from the layout standpoint. And by the way, the front of the building having that fence across the front of it would have been very difficult because somebody could be standing behind that fence and shooting, and you wouldn't know if they were back there or not. So you'd have to be very careful even when you approach the building. So it'd be a very difficult building to breach. Now, what I did not see any holes punched in the side of the building, Austin, from what they said they ran through the wall of the building. Did you see that at all?
No, that's the same thing I looked at. The problem was the back side of the building was adjacent to another back side of a gas station property. I looked at this, and the fence they had erected with the black tarp over it actually covered every single square inch of the perimeter of the property. It did not stop at all. It even connected to the rear fence of the adjacent property that went into their back area of the gas station. So I think that's where the bathroom was that they breached, from what I had read and what I had seen on the layout of the inside of the building. If you're facing the building from the road, I think the bathroom is either on the far back right-hand side or the very back of the building. So I did not see any of that over there. Like I said, like you said, the black fence was in a lot of area as far as the outside bar. I did not see any, from what I saw, I did not see any type of bullet holes anywhere on the outside of the building. Now, that doesn't really mean anything at all, but I did not see any of that outside.
No, I didn't see any chips or anything, because what happens if even the bullet doesn't penetrate, it's going to chip the paint off, and you're going to see the
black
marks. None of that. There was no. So they were saying that they were shooting on the outside of the building. I saw no evidence of that at all. I think I can pretty much guarantee you that's a lie. Okay, I've seen bullet pop marks, you know, you still see them if you go to Pearl Harbor. They didn't fix them on the buildings when the buildings were strafed by the MiGs. They still have the bullet pop marks in the whole thing. So if you're a 223 is going to chip block. It may not go through it on the first shot, but it's going to chip a block. It has to. Plus the ricochets. Didn't see any of that. And I didn't see any holes at all in the front perimeter fencing that was installed by the people who were running the nightclub. I didn't see any of that. I saw no holes in that whatsoever. So the whole story of them having a shootout in the front of the building, guys, as far as I can tell, that's completely and totally bogus. And,
right, that was the first media report, if you guys remember, that they still held to, is that there was an off-duty security police officer there that basically got in a firefight with the individual, and then he ran into the building and started this massacre. That, to me, didn't seem like that happened at all. And also, too, if you recall the article that I brought up last week from the out-of-county police officer that responded, that was real close by, who was one of the first individuals with about six other Orlando PD officers that went into the building, that did not see the shooter, that had him apparently cornered in the bathroom, and then they were called out for SWAT, you know, to stand down for 2.5 hours until SWAT went in. That also, too, again, I don't know how factual that was, but as far as any type of significant shooting outside of the building, rounds going into the front of the building or the entrance, I could not see any of that at all, I mean, from what I saw.
Me neither, Austin. So, again, all we've done by going up there is have more questions.
Yeah.
You know, we got a few questions answered. We know for sure that there's one ingress and one egress. Now, that's the thing. Now, remember, fire code doesn't allow that. Fire code doesn't allow... I guess he must have been grandfathered in as an old structure, but on new buildings, if it can hold 800 or 900 people, you've got to have multiple exit points. So I don't know how in the world they were able to get coding done with all of that, unless it was just all, like I said, grandfathered in. So it was an interesting morning. It took us about 3 hours to run up there and back, and the traffic was awful on I-4. The death corridor. So be very careful you come to Orlando. There are so many accidents and fatalities on I-4 now that it's turned into like one of the worst roads in the state. Next, first story I want to talk about today, Obama has decided with the United Nations now with Lynch that they're going to set up a domestic police force with the United States, and they're going to set up cities all over the United States where they're going to have UN patrols running through to and fro through the streets. Now, the interesting part about all of this, Austin, is this is not even constitutional. You can't bring a foreign power onto our shores with their army like this and do this. Plus, where is Congress in this? Nobody's asking Congress if this is okay. It's like we are allowing the United Nations, which should be bulldozed and imploded and shoved off into the bay out there or hauled off for the rubble that it is. You know, we're allowing the United Nations now to put troops in the United States, which is exactly what my good friend Dave Hodges has been saying for years and years and years, and now they're getting blatant with it. And quite frankly, I think these UN MRAPs that have been being moved around now are probably going to be used for that purpose. Guys, listen to me. We've got a big problem coming up here. Here's the problem. We have a very compressed timeline now. We've got July, August, September, and October. Then we've got the election. So we've got 4 months left that these guys are either going to have to get off the pot and do something really bad, or they're not going to do anything, or they're going to put Hillary into the White House. Now, the way it looks like to me is they're staging it for Hillary because they want her to be president, and they're going to do whatever they have to from an election fraud standpoint to take this election away from Donald Trump, because there's no way they're putting UN troops into the cities in the United States knowing that Donald Trump's coming into the White House. What do you think, Austin?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did some research on that, and actually that was back in October when Loretta Lynch clarified that with Obama. So it's been an actual 9 months since they agreed upon that. The United Nations was the one that basically started the entire bring-up of what was going on with this, and they did it under the guise of course, terrorism again. What they stated is basically if the local and municipal effort to counter violent extremism is inadequate and hasn't developed a systematic effort that is in place to share experiences, pool resources, and build a community to inspire local action on a global scale. Remember, this is the UN. This is always what they do. Everything's on a global scale. It's always to increase global security, that the feds and the UN will be stepping in. Thus, the groundwork will be laid for an international interference down to the local level. It's called the Strong Cities Network. You can look it up. It's back from October of last year. And now it looks like in the last couple months that they're actually starting to implement this, especially with Orlando and the thing that happened out in California a few months back. And Loretta Lynch even stated, she said, this will serve as a vital tool to strengthen capacity building and improve collaboration between local defense on federal and international authorities. Again, bringing us into this global police state. This is what the overall, what this is. And the whole reason why I wanted to bring that up as well, is I'm glad Dad brought it up, is I've seen a lot of people bring up comments about the UN trucks, these armored vehicles that I talked about in detail yesterday, if you want to listen to yesterday's show, about, oh, they're getting transferred to the port of Savannah, they're getting transferred to Jacksonville to ship out, they're doing this, they're doing that, except they're not on I-95. They're going on Interstate 80. They're going on interstates out west, and we're seeing this multiple places. I mean, there were photos of this last year, of this happening repeatedly, and what they're slowly doing, in my opinion, is they're slowly setting up a United Nations domestic police force that they can use these guys. At first, it's going to be very, very subtle. Like an incident like this in Orlando will happen, and you'll see a UN truck or maybe two show up with the FBI to simply watch and take notes. And then what will slowly start to happen is we're going to start seeing these UN trucks show up for all kinds of different events. And then what you will start to see is UN vehicles policing with policing capabilities, meaning if there's some type of robbery, if there's any type of infraction on the road, something happens that what they want to get involved in, they're simply just going to pull you over in some of their armored vehicles that they have, and you're going to start seeing them driving around. A lot of people think that's completely crazy, that I'm off the wall. I brought this up years ago when when I started seeing all these UN trucks repeatedly over and over and over again. This isn't something that they're going to be able to do overnight, because most of the general public is not going to be accepted watching a white vehicle that says UN pull you over and give you a ticket or write you a warrant or write anything like that, because that's just simply not acceptable in the United States. It's the United Nations, you know, police, not the United States of America police. But this is what's going to slowly start happening. That's why they're moving this. They're pre-positioning assets. They're moving vehicles to different parts of the country. So when incidents has happened, you're going to start seeing them pop up one at a time, two at a time, three at a time. It can be very subtle. But the whole point is what Loretta Lynch said right here, this will be a vital tool to strengthen local dependence on federal and international authorities. She was very clear when she said that. She did not misspeak. This is all about bringing in the United Nations police departments to start forcing us to follow their laws, including the international UN gun treaty that John Kerry signed. You don't have to believe me on it. Look it up for yourself. This is coming, and now it's happening very, very fast. So all you naysayers that are saying that it's fear-mongering, seeing these UN trucks by the dozens being transported across the country, I hate to tell you guys, this is not a joke anymore. This is happening now, and it's happening fast. And like Dad just said, over the next 3 to 4 months, I think we're going to start seeing this stuff ramp up really, really, really quick now.
Well, unless they're planning on just giving Hillary the election. I mean, guys, you have to remember something. When they brought the Diebold election machines in 15, 16 years ago, and they started distributing them, that was one of the easiest things to hack into and change the entire election. You don't have to hack into every Diebold equipment in the entire country. You just have to have, there are certain key swing states that are either going to go Republican or Democrat. It's going to give the candidacy, the presidency, to one of the candidates. It, right now, it looks like a really tight election. I personally don't believe that. I think that's a complete and total lie. I think Trump's ahead by 10 to 15%. The problem is that they can't tell you the real numbers in the polls, because then if Hillary has a massive upset of 20% and Hillary wins, suddenly they're going to say, see, you know, this is election fraud. We're all going to say that. They're going to be rioting in the streets. But if it's 1 or 2% difference and there's all these little swing states going on, then they can keep the theater of the election going again for another year. And quite frankly, we're trying to do a political problem for a spiritual solution, and that's the problem we've had for years and years in the United States. And I'm going to say this again. And I know I've stepped on a lot of toes yesterday, and I know we've got some letters about the fact that, you know, I told people, look, if you're going to vote for third party, this is not the year. But here's the point. It's the preachers and the pulpit that have done this. We got a bunch of limp-wristed, panty-wearing, lace-wearing on their panties and their underwear preachers in the pulpit that won't tell the truth about what's going on. And we've allowed the government, through their 501(c) corporations, to come in here now and completely take advantage of the United States and stop the free flow of information from the pulpits. It was the preachers in the United States back in 1776 that called for a dissolution with the relationship with Great Britain and King George. But England had made a horrible mistake, because in the 1850s and 60s, what was going on is we had the French-Indian Wars, and the settlers had been brought in and conscripted as a colonial militia and had been trained by the British Army to fight in the French and Indian War, which was all along the entire frontier. And so what ended up happening is, when this war started, with the Revolutionary War started, there was already a complete and total military presence of the colonial militia in the United States, which England had never counted on. And these guys were hardcore. They were hardcore fighters. You know, they were back in the woods fighters. And so they weren't scared of the British regulars. They weren't scared of them whatsoever. In fact, two movies that you can really see that on is the first one that I mentioned earlier, the one that our theme song comes from, the Last of the Mohicans. That was done during that French and Indian War period, and right after that was the Revolutionary War. And you can watch, if you want to learn more about that, from a movie standpoint, you can watch Mel Gibson. And what was the name of the movie he did on that? The Patriot. Yeah, and you can watch those two movies. But see, this is the same problem that they've run into now. Because of the massive war we've been in for the past 15 years in Afghanistan, it's been the never-ending war, because we're protecting the poppy fields over there. But they have literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of soldiers that have been trained, that have cycled in and out of the military now, that are in the United States fully trained for war, fully trained. Okay, and so they don't know what to do with these guys. And so they know that they're going to join the military in the United States if they're told to fire on the American citizens, who will not do that. And so they're going to be fighting a huge war in the United States in the event that the military doesn't completely capitulate. This is why the military has been completely dismantled in the past 4 or 5 years, and the top leadership that wasn't willing to fire on American citizens have been dismissed by Obama, along with other reasons. Because if they're not willing to follow the chain of command from the Oval Office all the way down, they're not going to allow them to stay in these high positions, especially these 3- and 4-star generals and these colonels. They can't stay in because they have too many people who are willing to take up arms underneath them and follow them into battle. They're not willing to allow that to happen. That's one of the reasons they had to get rid of George Patton. I personally believe that Patton was murdered. A lot of other historians believe that he was too, because he wanted to rearm the German troops and keep the American troops in Germany and go after the Russians and stop that entire threat beforehand. But that wasn't the plan of the global elite who financed both sides of the war. Now I'm talking about the Rothschild banking cartel again. If you watch, if you read the book, Pawns in the Game, by William Carr. It's free. You can get it as a PDF download online for free. It goes into detail on how this Rothschild banking cartel financed both sides of the war, and how the Satan group, in which they're attached to, basically were the ones who basically decided who was going to get what in Europe. I mean, why in the world was the Soviet Union given half of Germany and Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary and all these different places that were never Soviet territories before that? Well, it's because that's what they wanted to do, to break up Europe and to break up this whole mess over there and to reward Stalin for what he had done. You got to go back and look at the history of what happened, guys. It was a major, major mess over there, and basically Russia won the war, and they were allowed to keep half of Europe as a prize. And it was awful what they did to the people in these countries in which they came into, and the slaughter of civilians that were just untold, tens of millions, probably 50 or 60 million. A lot of people say the Holocaust cost, you know, with millions dying in the concentration camp, was a horror. And it was indeed a horror. It was a horrible horror of World War II. But the reality is, Hitler was small potatoes compared to Stalin. Stalin was the real deal as far as terrorist, destroyers of nations, and murderer. He was unbelievable what he did and what the Russians did with the Bolshevik Revolution, financed again by the Rothschild Bank. I mean, so guys, you got to look at history. You got to see who the players are. And remember, I mentioned this yesterday. It's always the folks who do the money deals are the ones who are pulling the strings. Because if they stop doing the money deals, everything comes to a screeching halt. That's who the Rothschilds are. They've been doing this for centuries now, and they've got this global dominance. And yesterday, yeah, I got kind of upset. I started fussing about what was going on with Trump and people who were going to vote for Hillary, who were Christians, etc. And guys, let me explain something to you. When I get upset like that, I go on a rant. That is not an act. Okay, I don't do that. You know, most of my shows are like this, just calm down, talking to you guys. But every once in a while, like when I start talking about these pedophiles in the Catholic Church and stuff like that, I just get really, really angry. And I've learned already that you guys don't want me to buffer what I'm going to say about that and just tell you the truth. But when I said yesterday the United States was in round 11 in a major heavyweight boxing fight, and that all of this political correctness had already forced the United States to drop her hands, and she couldn't defend herself anymore, and she was being beaten into a pulp, and she was about to go to her knees, and that Donald Trump was the only person that could get the United States back again and starting to put deals together that were going to be fair for the U.S., these globalists have dismantled our entire infrastructure of our ability to produce goods in the United States. That's why all the stuff's coming out of Mexico and China. That's why we have no jobs. That's why we have 100 million people unemployed in the United States right now who can't find jobs. That's why so many college kids are still living with their parents. Now, and on top of that, they're saddled with this huge college debt, because all the mid and upper level management jobs in manufacturing are gone. They don't exist anymore in the United States. They've been shelved offshore. So you've got a major problem now in the United States with all of this stuff going on, and we have to get some decent trade deals going again. We've got to get the United Nations off our shore. Now, whether Trump will do that or not, I have no idea. I think that if he started running with that premise, he'd probably consider some wacko. But if I was running, that's what I would do. I would tell him that my first thing is to be an executive order. We're emptying out the building. We're planting explosives in it. Somebody's apparently very good at that when you look at 9/11. And that whole building would go into rubble instantaneously, and it would be bulldozed. And all those people would be told to leave the United States. I wouldn't shut down the foreign embassies in the United States. I wouldn't do that. But as far as us being the head of the United Nations and funding it, you know, it's just a Rothschild thing is what it is. That's what it is. And I've talked about this so many times. That's where you have to follow the money back to. So it's interesting. Here's an interesting article on aspirin. I know a lot of you are being told by your medical doctors, your allopathic doctors, to take aspirin every single day. And I have warned you guys that aspirin causes, can cause a condition called wet macular degeneration, which you can actually become, you can actually go blind from aspirin because it causes the retina to detach from the back of the eyeball, because aspirin is such an effective blood thinner, it causes these tiny little capillaries behind the retina to start bleeding out. But here's another article just said that this aspirin, taking aspirin every day, gives you a 500% increased risk of Crohn's disease. It says taking a small serving of aspirin has been recommended for years as basically a blood thinner for people to reduce the risk of heart disease. But what are the dangers? If taken regularly over a period of time, a small amount of aspirin can lead to the formation of painful stomach and intestinal ulcers. And Austin and I both know folks that have actually ulcerated their esophagus and intestinal tract from aspirin. And BC powder, same thing. If you're going to take a BC powder, mix it in a glass of water, and always make sure you have a large glass of water you mix it with, and rinse your mouth out when you get done with it. That's some rough stuff to be putting on your stomach. Larger amounts have also been associated with tinnitus, ringing in the ears, and it's also known to interact poorly with a whole bunch of other pharmaceutical drugs, and it also can cause Reye syndrome in children, and they can die from it. Aspirin is one of the oldest and one of the best known non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs that we have, and it can be used in moderation. Anything can't like that, but except for even ibuprofen can't. But ibuprofen is really hard on the kidneys. But it's here, taking aspirin regularly, 500% increase in Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease is a devastating form of inflammatory bowel disease that can cause severe irritation, even bleeding throughout the entire digestive tract. Its impact on the sensitive digestive tissues is undisputed. Aspirin's tendency to cause ulcers with prolonged use is what has initially led the university research to investigate connection between the two. Research has conducted follow-up investigations with 200,000 participants who have been involved with earlier European study. So this is a huge, huge, huge study, and it's saying that, hey guys, look, aspirin is a dangerous product. It should only be used if absolutely necessary. Never take these things, as far as I'm concerned, on a regular basis, including baby aspirin every day, which is complete and total nonsense. I personally believe you're massively increasing your risks of macular degeneration, bleeding internally, and Crohn's disease now, and ulcerative colitis is what they're talking about. So what do you think, Oz?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as you said, aspirin and ibuprofen can have fantastic usage for inflammation and issues when they're needed over short periods of time. But the truth is, for, you know, a blood thinner, you know, 1,600 IUs of a good mix of tocopherol vitamin E, like we carry, our super potent E, is a fantastic natural blood thinner and has incredibly good properties for cardiovascular health, for providing healthy cholesterol, lipid levels, an array of different positive effects with really no side effects at all. And I've told people that repeatedly, that, you know, have issues with trying to keep their blood thin. A, you need to make sure your water intake is where it needs to be, because that's one of the biggest factors of keeping your blood thin, is your water intake. Second would be the vitamin E, and if you're also still concerned about it, throw in our CoQ10 ubiquinol, which is a bioactive, pretty much raw form of CoQ10 that your body doesn't even have to convert. It's already in ubiquinol status, which provides really, really good absorption rate and really good heart health. So, yeah, there's a lot of good options besides taking an aspirin a day just to keep your blood thin. That should be, honestly, guys, one of the last things you want to use it for. Because as Dad said, I've known multiple people that have had issues with gastrointestinal problems, you know, esophageal erosion, ulcers, all that stuff from heavy aspirin usage. And the thing about it is, it doesn't take that long. A lot of people think, oh, I need to be on it, you know, heavy dosages for 4 or 5 years before this happens. No, if the situation is right, you can start having issues in weeks, if not months, very, very quickly with heavy usage of it. Like he said, too, with BC powder, it's unbuffered. It's in a powdered form. So, yeah, that's my take on it, guys. There's a lot of natural approaches besides taking aspirin a day. There's a lot of better uses for it than just trying to use it as a blood thinner.
Well, and also the vitamin E. Vitamin E is critical. Vitamin E and cod liver oil. So a good heart health program is CoQ10, vitamin E, and cod liver oil every single day. And of course, there's all kinds of other exotic stuff that you can take, like xanthine, all kinds of other things, and, you know, turmeric and all the stuff. There's all kinds of great products that you can take that really are good for the cardiovascular system and for your body overall. But guys, if you just want a really good, healthy heart program, get on a multivitamin, get on some vitamin C, get on E, CoQ10, and cod liver oil. And that's a phenomenal basic program. And if you really want to go one step notch, throw in a B vitamin, especially our activated methylated B vitamins, because what that does, that prevents the buildup of homocysteine in the system. And it prevents that from building up from all of the different meats and all the chemicals and all the other stuff that you're putting into your body that causes inflammation. So the B complex is really good for that. So guys, it's really important that you just stay tuned to the show and you learn how to keep your body in really good health, because we're going to sit here and tell you guys the truth. Plus, you can also go to healthmasters.com and you can sign up at the website for our health updates. We have a lot of those. In fact, right now, I brought some writers in to help me do some more articles. And so we're going to be bringing out, I've got a whole new article coming out. Hopefully it'll be out by next week on brain health. And we're going to go into detail on what you can do for your brain to have really, really good brain health. I've also written several articles on that already that are already posted on the website. But you guys, listen to me. I want to thank you so much, you know, for just letting me fuss every once in a while and trying to do these shows to the best of my ability. Because, guys, we're not on a teleprompter here. I mean, if we were on YouTube right now, you'd see I got an office here at the house. You know, we're in a back room. I mean, this is not anything fancy, because, you know, we're not trying to do that. Now, we can go to YouTube, I guess, if you guys ask us to, and we could do live feeds every day and get some really fancy equipment to do all of this with. And we may go ahead and do that as the show continues to grow. But I want to thank you for your support of Health Masters and your support of Austin and me. We love you guys. We really do. And I want to thank you so much for all of the emails that we received and all the phone calls that I personally took. Asking how Austin was doing, and as you can tell, he's doing much, much better. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, this is interesting. I want to bring this up because we've talked about this repeatedly, and now it's starting to become an issue. Two women have been diagnosed with transient smartphone blindness, which is temporary, but again shows you the level of brightness that these iPhones are causing. The importance of not using a smartphone at night, because the blue light emitted can wreak havoc on your sleep pattern. And now they're finally starting to prove that it can also cause issues with your eyesight. It's called transient smartphone blindness, and it's documented in two women from the United Kingdom. Both women reported mysterious vision problems that occurred only at night or first thing in the morning. The doctors later learned the women's vision problems only occurred if they'd been using their smartphone in bed. The patients were looking at their smartphone on their side with just one eye, with the other eye blocked by a pillow or something else in bed while they were laying down. In this situation, the eye blocked by the pillow was already adapted to the dark, while the other eye became adapted to the extremely bright blue light. When the smartphone turned off, the eye adapted to the light and perceived to be blind until it was adjusted to the dark. The doctors actually did an experiment to see if they could replicate it, and sure enough, they could. When they were looking with their both eyes, it only caused a slight issue. When they didn't experience any vision problems then. When they looked at one eye, they were able to recreate the symptoms exactly the same and always in the eye that had been looking in the smartphone. They said, your vision will come back in a few minutes, and it's not life-threatening. But again, I just wanted to bring this up because this is something that a lot of people are doing now, and they're hearing about it, and they're actually experiencing it. So turn your brightness down on your phones. These phones are so ridiculously bright, it's almost a joke. If you're trying to show somebody a photo, you're trying to do something like that, it's one thing, but on a daily basis, using it, staring at it, going on the internet, whatever, turn the brightness down on it. It's not good on your eyes to stare at light that bright for an extended period of time, especially at nighttime when you're sleeping, as you can see these women found out over in the UK.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, too, is that, you know, when I get up in the morning first thing, when I'm checking my emails for the day or whatever, 6 or 7 in the morning, sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning, I put the iPad down as low as it'll go. I mean, I just put it down as low as it'll go because it's still dark in the house, and I don't want that bright light. So just make it as bright. See, the reason it goes so bright, it's not because you need it to see in the dark. It's because you need it to see if you're outside in the sunlight. Okay, if you're outside in the bright sunlight, you can't see an iPhone unless it's turned all the way up. It's very difficult to do. And that's what it's for. Not to be using when you're inside of the house to start messing up your retina. Now here's another interesting article. I love these Rothschild flunkies. The IMF is now warning against sovereignty, nationalism, and a sound immigration policy. This is Christine Lagarde. She's an she's a Rothschild appointed person who's head of the International Monetary Fund. Total just lowlife. She's director of the IMF, and she says that the TPP and the TTIP must be passed. Oh, these Rothschild stooges, they make me nauseous. Although she admits that the adoption of such agreements will widen the gap between the rich and the poor in the short term. Oh yeah, because that's what they want. They want feudalism. It says globalism's success depends on the regions and nations without borders. It feeds from countries whose governments have been thoroughly absorbed by regional, non-elected organizations and then who transfer the power to globally non-elected elites. This is exactly what they're doing. So we get this silly group of people that is completely set up and run by the Rothschild Foundation and group. It's not a foundation, it's just the Rothschild Enterprise. These are the same guys, I remember, that held a $100,000 a plate dinner for Hillary Clinton for fundraising. So, I mean, these guys have got a lot of really, really wealthy friends, and all they want to do is take over the United States and take over the world. They want the world because they want to bring in their Luciferian government, and we've talked about it multiple times. And that's what's going on. So that's the real truth of what's happening here. You have to look back at the Rothschild banking cartel and the Sabbatean, Frankist, Kabbalist, Luciferians that they are. They're not true Jews. They don't believe in Judaism. They don't believe in the Torah. They believe in Lucifer. That's who these guys are. Now, they masquerade as Jews because they want to try to cover themselves up for what they are and what they do. But guys, listen to me. These guys aren't Jews. This is the synagogue of Satan. They were called out in the book of Revelation. And that's who these guys are. Austin, what's your next story?
Well, this one keeps getting brought up again now because we're starting to see more and more states are starting to switch over to this, or at least trying to start this, as far as the UN 2030 agenda. Delaware, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and New Hampshire now are again proposing new pilots to figure out how they might charge motorists a fee for the miles they travel. And we brought this up months ago, and more states are starting to try and implement this. This is all comes back to the UN Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, about essentially forcing people to pay more money out of the trillions of dollars every year that law-abiding citizens pay every single year. It's still not enough. They still want more money because they say, we need more money for the road infrastructure. It's decaying. We need more cash for this. Well, I got an idea. How about we stop spending billions and billions of dollars on the F-22? Or better yet, how about we stop spending $1.2 trillion on the F-35? Or just some small apples, how about we stop spending $40 billion a year on international aid, or $100 billion a year on illegal immigration, food stamps, and housing policies? There's just a couple numbers off the top of my head that I'm throwing around here, and I love this next sentence that it brings up in here. So right now we're talking about cash flow crunch, not having enough cash to pay for the revenue and the infrastructure and everything. Okay, that's where we're at right now. This is the excuse they're using. The next sentence in here. The I-95 Corridor Coalition, which represents transportation officials from 16 states, applied for a federal grant last month to test the idea. I love it. So we already don't have enough money, they're saying, to pay for the roads, so we need to tax all the drivers on how many miles they drive. But before we start taxing them, we need to apply for a multi-million dollar grant to test the idea to see how effective it'll be. And it goes on to here, it says officials will stitch together the policies and technologies needed to count the miles driven by 50 recruits from each of the four states. They will be sending out Fox invoices, basically fake invoices monthly, and they will collect the data that legislatures and the driving public would require to decide if the change is needed. Although California already is launching it in July, also with fake invoices, Oregon has already started successfully with a volunteer program collecting actual cash. The question even basis such on how much to charge per mile are part of what needs to be hashed out in the experiment. Oregon, for example, is charging 1.5 cents per mile in their program, which is designed to raise the same amount as the gas tax revenue. The idea is to get folks comfortable. Listen to this. This is a quote from Hendren, one of the persons involved in this. The idea is to get folks comfortable that mileage-based user fees are feasible, reasonable, and easy-to-use approach. Now, here's the issue that I have with this before. Every single time throughout history, without fail, when we let a government entity start taxing us for something new, it never, not one single time in history, has it ever stayed at what they told us the tax rate was going to stay at. Not one single time. You can look it up. IRS started at 1% flat tax across the board. Now what do we have? 40% plus all the other crap they had on there with the Medicare, Social Security, all this other garbage. All this is going to do is turn into another massive, massive revenue stream that only hurts people that are trying to drive to do legitimate business, like truck drivers or people that are in sales and marketing, multi-level marketing people that are driving 20, 30, 40, 50,000 miles a year. All this is going to do is hurt the economy that much more, and it has absolutely nothing to do with increasing revenue to try and keep the infrastructure up. All it is to add another tax so they can suck America dry with another form of taxation that they can continue to raise, and raise again on us like they've done through all the hundreds of taxes that we already have and already pay. Stop spending the money, Congress. Stop spending the money. Stop allowing the budget to blow up every single year. This is what has to be done. If we stop spending money on egregious, nonsensical behavior, this type won't even be an issue. We can directly fund the infrastructure and everything we need through state taxes and everything that we already have set up in place. That's all that needs to be done. But doing a tax base, I mean, so what happens for the poor people that are already stuck in these electric cars like Priuses? They're already trying to save money on gas. They already drive a Prius. And now they're going to still have to pay taxes for driving, even though they get 40, 50, 60 miles per gallon in a 2,000-pound car that does little to no damage on the road. So I mean, what happens to those guys now? This is what needs to be brought up. So I really hope a lot of the state legislation is going to reject these proposals, because every single time in history we allow taxation to start on something new, it never stays the same. They say a cent and a half, which is actually a lot right now, it'll never stay there. It'll be 4 cents, it'll be 5 cents, it'll be 10 cents, and it'll start being a dollar, just like the toll roads every single year always go up. So I just wanted to bring that up to people to kind of wake you up to realize what type of totalitarian police state we're starting to fall in now, that you're not even going to be able to drive anywhere without being taxed on where you go. And I promise you, if it goes far enough, they're going to start making, the only way they're going to do this is to get black boxes in people's vehicles.
That's
only
right.
Way.
There you go. That's
it,
right.
Only way. So not only will they start taxing it based on your black box, they will have GPS coordinates of every single individual on the road at any time. And then if you get pulled over and you're caught driving without a black box, they're going to arrest you and impound your vehicle. And if they don't do that, they're going to give you some massive, massive, outrageous fine to say you have to pay for the back taxes that you didn't pay for the driving. This is exactly how it starts incrementally. This is exactly where it's going to go, guys. So make sure if you see this start happening in your state, you do everything you can with your legislation to make sure it doesn't get anywhere off the ground, because this is not something that needs to be acceptable at all in the United States.
This is all part of the UN garbage as far as like carbon taxes and everything else. I mean, I had a car I had over in Germany here a few weeks ago. I was driving around over there. I get a ticket in the mail that I owe $25 in carbon tax. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You guys kid me not. I kid you not. It was opened up in Dresden. I'm like, I owe you $25 in carbon tax. You've got to be kidding me. And so I contacted the car, where I got the car, and they told me that basically they'd already paid that and just don't worry about it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, they've already got all this junk going on over there. That's what they have. And see, it's all about taking your last penny from you. They want to extract everything from you. Now remember, the Rothschild boys who were doing this, This has nothing to do with money. It doesn't at all. They print as much money as they want for like a penny for a $100 bill. And better than that, they can just go into their massive computer and digitize $1 trillion and never even print it and have zero cost and loan it out. Okay? So it's not about the money. It's about your enslavement. You've got to get that. It's so funny. The other day I was talking to Katie, Dave Hodges, his co-host. She and I are good friends. And I've never met her, but we always talk on the phone or on texting. And it was interesting to me. She said that maybe the sheeple wake up now that we have UN vehicles on the roads and they'll get mad. And I text her back. I said, they're not going to get mad. They're still asleep. They're still asleep. They don't care. They really don't care because they don't know the truth. See, the Bible says that light has come into the world, but the world has preferred the darkness. See, that's what the world always prefers. They want to go the easy route. That's how they want to do it. They track you with your, the iPhones, you know, the Samsung Galaxies, all of these smartphones, they're all slave trackers. That's all they are. It's a slave tracker. They track you wherever you go. And Austin's right. Now the insurance companies, they want insurance information for the black box. They've already requested that in all of these cars, in all of the OnStar and all of this other information. Because now, if you over-rev a car, they could say you validate your warranty because you were going too fast and you didn't shift it properly. I mean, that was really bad with Nissan a few years ago with that, with one of their fancy little sports cars they had. I mean, if you over-revved it and the computer said you over-revved it and you did too many launches, you didn't have the ability to get the warranty work done on the car. What was the name of the car they were doing that with, Oz?
It was the Nissan GTR. It was basically like the new version of the Skyline, and they were basically grenading transmissions left and right when the vehicle got introduced. Really fast car. Just it was not designed well as far as the transmission, and now they've worked it out. But it was crazy because we talked to multiple people that had this happen. I'm very big into sports cars. And they straight up told me, they said, yeah, if you run in, you bring this in for warranty work, and you grenade your transmission, and you got 150 miles on the odometer, they extract the black box out of it, they do full diagnostics, and if you did too many launches, or you did too many high revving launches, or you did them in too many amount of time, or your temperature went over this amount, they immediately deny your warranty claim, and basically you're stuck replacing, you know, a $15,000, $20,000 transmission out of your pocket because they said you did something that they didn't approve of while you were driving it. And it was a huge debacle with that car. I mean, it completely single-handedly killed the sales of that vehicle when they first launched it. And I don't think they've ever recovered. I think they still make it. I haven't followed it that much lately. They may not make it anymore. But it was insane. We went to test drive one. They wouldn't even let you test drive. Wouldn't let you test drive. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you bought it. You put it on your card. They still won't let you test drive it until you sign the papers. They said, no, the transmission's finicky. You know, you need to make sure you own it. They're going, whoa, wait a minute. The transmission's finicky, so I can't test drive it. What happens when I drive it off the lot and grenade the transmission? Well, you have to take that up with warranty. If you did anything wrong, then, you know, warranty's basically going to be denied. They told me that, and I was like, you know what? Keep your car. Have fun with it. I'm not going to buy anything like that. You guys enjoy it.
Well, and, you know, a lot of cars now, what they do is they have it so there's like a break-in period on the motor, and they won't allow you to exceed 5,000 or 6,000 RPMs. I know the BMW motorcycles are like that, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the fact that you can't really rawhide it until the first 1,000 miles are off of it. I got that, okay? But you know, after a point in time, it gets ridiculous. Oh, you're going too fast. We saw it on your black box. We're going to send you a ticket in the mail. I mean, guys, if you think I'm joking. You let this police state continue that we're living in right now, and that's where it's going to. Now, here's an interesting article. Let's get off that topic for a bit. We're almost out of time just chit-chatting here. 3D printed athletic shoe races on and what it means to your retail-based supply chain. They're using 3D printers now also to make parts of running shoes. Were you aware of that?
I was not aware of that at all, actually.
That's how far technology has come. With the 120th running of the Boston Marathon, the competition to bring 3D printed athletic shoes to the general market is sprinting ahead, but for the sneaker industry, the technology and supply chain will be a marathon, not a sprint. In other words, it's going to be here for a long, long time. They go into detail. They also are saying they're using 3D printers in the space shuttle to replace parts if they need replacing of parts. I had no idea. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I haven't been on a space shuttle. But what's interesting about all of this is that I had no idea that 3D printer technology had grown that fast. So, guys, let me explain something to you. Now, you may think that I'm Looney Tunes or whatever. You probably think that anyhow, but it doesn't make a difference to me. I don't care because I'm just going to tell you the truth. This technology is not something we develop. This whole thing that we've developed came out of this 47 crash of these spaceships. I mean, this is what happened. I mean, this is, if you read Colonel Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, this whole demon thing, all of this mess that's going on that Hitler did to get all this information, this technology is so advanced. You're telling me that we came from Orville and Wilbur Wright, you know, 100 years ago, in flying biplanes in World War II and dropping bombs manually off the side of the plane by hand, okay? For 100 years later, we're printing tennis shoes and we're printing parts for machinery. I mean, guys, come on, think about this for a second. The odds of that actually going on and happening in our lifetime in the last 100 years without some type of external help is pretty doggone remote. I mean, consider that we were still driving by cables and pulleys and sticks on these planes in World War II. I mean, something really big happened in the late 40s and the 50s, and we've got a lot of technology from it. Now, if you don't want to believe in the Roswell thing, read the book, Day After Roswell by Colonel Corso. He's a full-blown colonel, worked for three different administrations, top military brass. I don't know why the guy would die. He waited for 50 years after he got out to make sure that he was outside of his timeline as far as divulging any medical, any military secrets, and he wrote the book. You can watch him online, too. And I don't know, baby. I don't know why he would lie. There's too much other stuff going on there. There's something else, some other type of technology that's coming from somewhere. So now we're printing tennis shoes. Are you joking me? Now, I know they're also printing ears. Remember that also? They're growing ears and tubes. They're doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, so this technology is going like at light speed. And guys, if you don't stay with it, buddy, I tell you, you're going to be left behind. And then there's a really good article, by the way, I want you guys to read today, too. My friend Paul McGuire with News with Views came out with a really good article today. I was going to go over it with you today, but you guys can read it. It's called Brexit, the EU, and the Transatlantic Muddy Matrix. Paul McGuire is one of the finest writers that I know. Man's absolutely brilliant. I had the privilege of meeting him last year when he spoke in Orlando. I consider him a friend. I interviewed him on the Power Hour several times. And I need to bring him on our show. He's just absolutely amazing. He's on Hagman & Hagman all the time on a regular basis, too. So, yeah, so that's going to happen. We'll have to get him on the show, Austin. Anyway, what's your next story, Austin? We're almost out of time.
Yeah, we're almost out of time here. Let me see what else I have left.
Oh, we're out of time. Austin, I'm going to let you close. Guys, we love you. We appreciate you. I'm glad Austin's back with me. Austin, go ahead and close, and you know what to do, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. God bless.
Yeah, guys, we appreciate everything. Thank you again for all your prayers, emails, and support. I really appreciate it. If you need anything, give us a call here at the office at Health Masters. You can email us as well online at healthmasters.com on our contact form. We appreciate everything, guys. You have a wonderful night, blessed night. We'll talk to you guys again tomorrow. Thank you.